before us there was much, and after us there will continue to be in this wonderful cycle that is this life that we live in. And if you just take the connection to the ground, to the soil, and just watch all these past, futures and presents in one.
Here is one of our lowering straps. You can see the coloration of the soil on them, the history stained into the edge. The red thread marks the midpoint. It rests over the center of the grave, a guide for when we stretch them over before the coffin is laid on top. They are an umbilical cord reaching out into the womb of my own death, raveling me nearer. Hopefully, when my time has come, I will be burnt on a hill. If I am, then perhaps one should be wrapped around me, the other to journey with my wife to who knows where. These decisions are not ours to make, and maybe they will slip through the hands of my family as they lower me down into the ground. The fact that womb and tomb are adjacent, rhyming words, it does feel like a returning to a mother. And once everything is returned and scooped in, you're back where you came from, symbolically, or in some ways very, very really. You're back in the mantle of the earth, surrounded by soil that eventually you will become.
Welcome to Soil, Common Ground. My name is Shanice Aretha. In this series, we've been exploring soil through the eyes of the artists who work with it. This is the last episode. It's about endings and new beginnings, because decay and rebirth are intertwined. Death is a part of life. How can we think about soil as a site for personal rebirth? And what's the importance of soil in helping us heal and navigate the future of this planet?
I learned at some point how people without roots or without a relation to the ground, when they draw a tree, they will not draw roots. We are disconnected from this under the soil life. And I just opened the curtain, and Jerusalem is really a big city. I see a lot of buildings in the horizon. Between me and the highway, there is a patch of abandoned soil, very long and with pines at the top. In Islam, like in terms of thinking about death and life, min al-turab wa ila al-turab, from soil to soil. We are trying to express that we come from soil, we go to soil. But I started to use it in terms of representing life, not death. From soil to soil. Everything is from soil to soil. This circle. My name is Muhammad Saleh. Through art, or ecological art, permaculture art, I try to find solutions to issues, bring positive practical solutions to things that are needed to be solved here. I grew up, I didn't see people planting, I didn't see people weeding, I didn't see people cultivating, pruning, nothing, not even watering. I started writing nathr in Arabic, modern poetry, kind of hip-hop, that relates to some longing to the land. And I said, barari, 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 wilderness, 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 take me to live in the wilderness. I want to die in the wilderness, live in the wilderness. And a few months after that, the universe answered.
Mohammed ended up going to live in Turkey with his partner, who was there to study. He stayed a month, then two, then three. He was there for 3.5 years. His son was born there, in the wilderness.
I felt very strongly empowered that I can put hand in hand with nature to grow my food, to build my house, to make my medicine, being independent, self-sufficient, not one person, but communal level sufficiency. And this is very relevant for a Palestinian, I have to say. You feel that you are under and you can't. And then through my own healing and through my own self-cleansing from the inside on the psychological level, I started realizing that actually what we need to do is to fall in love with nature.
So he studied permaculture, learned about how the soil works. He was inspired.
It gave me a framework, and I thought, if I go back, this is the tool. I had ideas relevant to where I live and to the problems here. So I found the ability to represent my ideas through art, exhibitions, and it's like permaculture art.
Mohammed makes all sorts of gardens. He made a garden in a suitcase, and he made a garden for refugee camps. His work has also been a part of the Venice Biennale.
I made another art project called the City Farm, the Ardawa. We made a real nice farm there that on a very small land, producing 1,000 plants, trying to bring this concept of city farms into here in on abandoned lands. But then the whole farm was burned down completely to ashes. This piece of land is near where all the protests happen. And these protests that have a lot of tear gas bombs and bullets, they burn everything. It's, you know, like they are bombs, basically. So they land on this land constantly, every time, in every protest, which is very frequent. To the extent where I tell you, if you come back to this land after a year of no protests and you move the soil, you will start have tingling in your eyes and in your nose because the gas is still there from these chemicals. These chemicals are still present in the soil. I started asking myself what this land needs and what the owner of this land needs. And I ended up with the same answer, healing the soil. And I ended up finding the term bioremediation. If the land knows how to do it, you just like, you know, increasing the power of nature. So we make compostees and that brings the bacteria that cleans certain chemicals. And we put wood inside the soil and the wood makes the fungi and the fungi cleans other things. I planted sunflowers in circles in there. And these sunflowers are very strong in cleaning many kind of things from the soil. Just stop the harm. And you know, like a highway in 100 years will become forest again. This land is near two refugee camps. And when they saw these circles of sunflowers, people who pass by, children especially, like they stop and look at this and with like, wow, you know. People start to take photos, selfies with this piece of soil with all these sunflowers. Raising the consciousness of humans is really the main thing we need to do. Planting is good, but the harm to nature is the lack of consciousness of humans, because even the best of us harms nature. So this self-healing that I went through made me more sensitive to others and to nature. And from there, I wanted to also do this with the soil and with humans when I work also to bring this consciousness up, because this is really the key for healing in general.
I was just thinking about the sunflower patch. Both below and above ground is a healing space. You can bring a moment of solace to people to know that there's work being done to undo some of the damage done to the ground and to the soil through horrific acts of bombing and terror and horror being trapped in the ground through the waste and the byproducts of weaponry, and the fact that a plant can do some of the work to undo that. That's why we need artists that are thinking with the soil.
So this is the entrance to Sharper Meadow Natural Burial Ground. This is what we like to think of as the kind of portal where you step out of the car park and into ritual space. My name is Rue Callender, and I call myself an undertaker. I mean, obviously I'm a funeral director, but I prefer the term undertaker. And you can see the graves because they have raised beds. So the land is managed with the intention of it being as natural as possible. I would say my two most unexpected influences are crop circles and rave culture. I realised that you could create ceremonies which weren't disingenuous. They weren't bogus spirituality. You just had to kind of remove all the supporting struts that the church and other heavy rituals give you and just let people see that it's just the people standing there and that that's enough. There are certain fundamental things that have to happen, that the body of their person has to either be burnt or buried, but how we get there is really open-ended. It's quite difficult to avoid when you're burying somebody here to use the term planting them. You know, planting a seed, returning something to the earth. Oh, he's gone now, I can't see him. There's a devil coachman's beetle somewhere in here, which would be a shame to bury him. Oh, there he is. I'm going in.
Rue is now talking to us from inside the grave.
I've lost him. He's burrowed down deep. Well, he does live in the soil, so he'll be okay. There's a physical communication which is going on between your body and the earth, which are essentially the same thing in different forms. But I do wonder whether there's any sort of understanding or acknowledgement from the place that this thing is happening, that another human body is being laid into it and changing the molecular structure on what must be quite a large scale, really. And in the end, it's going to have well over 1,000 people buried in it. And that has got to not just change the biology of it, it's got to change the essence somehow in a slightly esoteric way, I think.
Listening to Rue, the word relationship really came to me. The relationship with the bodies that are being buried there and the soil that they're being put in. I think a lot of other people would use the word return, right? And that sense of the earth already knowing us or welcoming us back. He says that he's inspired by raves, right? What I reflect on when he speaks about the rave is this kind of happening that is happening with the people that are buried there and the multiple people that are buried there and the relationship with the insects and the animals and the earth. Actually, that is more of a riotous occasion where you're being like a welcome party back into the earth, and the insects and the bacteria and the fungi and the soil and the water and all the temperature. And you and all the things that you bring with you are all in commune trying to get that return, that party going. The soil is constantly regenerating. I see this every day working in my garden.
Now you see even more worms down there.
And before, when I first got to this garden, I wouldn't see anything like that. That is what you want to see. Whenever you dig into earth, you want to see life. You want to see things moving through it. So this soil used to be mushroom compost. Well, it comes from mushroom compost. When it was first mushroom compost and it was put on this bed, it was steaming, it was hot, and it was clumpy, right? And that was to kind of almost condition the soil that's underneath it. And then I leave it for the wonderful life that is underneath this to bring what I put on top down into beneath the surface, and they bring me back up this, after a while, this kind of wonderful aerated compost, good soil.
It's ancient, it's mysterious, it's matter taking new form, matter in flux.
How is that art form, and what could come out of that if we acknowledge that as a dynamic creative practice?
Because we can't perceive something with the senses we have, it doesn't mean that there's no activity there. Hello, I'm Haron Morrison. I'm an artist and writer with a studio at Somerset House in London. The Singing Compost is a collaboration between myself and Paul Grandjean, who's an artist and technologist. It began with an interest in trying to expand the human capacity to sense soil, to think about the sonification of soil, the auditory elements of soil that humans don't evolutionarily possess, is a sense that other non or more than human beings have. It begins with thinking about this emergent technology called MFCs, microbial fuel cells, sometimes called mud batteries. And they emerge from this understanding that specific kinds of bacteria produce electricity, and this can be used to power small sensors or small electronic devices. They in turn send a current to an Arduino board, which then converts that into sound depending on the current that's passing through the circuit. At the same time, it functions as a compost, so organic garden waste also deposited in the structure. Bacteria have been noted to produce this electrical discharge, and the compost is a better environment for those bacteria than others. So richer soil equates to richer sound.
The better the soil, the more it sings. What a lovely idea that if your garden is in a good place, or the soil in your garden is in a good place, full of life, teeming with life, it's going to cause a more electronic sound and it's going to make better music. You know, if that was like in everyone's garden, we could have like a singing street, you know.
Paul and I are super interested in artworks that can operate in both functional settings like a working garden, but also offer this poetry or non-logical value to their environment. I hope it goes some way to communicating the breadth of activity that is happening beyond the scope of our eyes and the scope of our ears. And by that logic, we should tread lightly and gently, because we're in a system that is much more complex than we may have the capacity to be consciously aware of. And this is the value of imagination as a means of thinking about what you can't perceive through your senses. And through that expanded imagination, one would like to hope it leads to an expanded sensitivity.
But of course, there is also human composting, which is being done by a number of people, notably a Seattle woman called Katrina Spade. She was in growing and in kind of, you know, she understood soil and decay before she got into it. But she has created a system where you have a kind of wall of hexagon pods. So it looks like a kind of giant beehive. And the body goes in there on a special mulch bed of alfalfa. And I'm not sure whether it's a secret what she kind of puts in there to speed it all up. But it's extraordinary. It's something like maybe 30 to 40 days. Everything in the body is broken down. Bones and all, think even teeth. So within 40 days, you have absolutely perfect soil, which is ready to be used in any way possible. I think the time it takes gives opportunities for really kind of thoughtful, prolonged rituals. And then you just get this perfect stuff that we all need, that can either go somewhere, maybe into the kind of forest, or even in houseplants for families to, you know, to grow, or, you know, or anything. I think a lot of the reason it hasn't properly rooted here yet is just people's fear that the public's reaction is going to be a bit squeamish, but that's not my impression at all.
I think it's funny, the idea of being transformed into another thing, because, you know, there are already ideas of reincarnation in lots of the world, but that is a very physical way of being transformed, you're turned into soil that nourishes the tree that somebody is able to eat from. That is, by and large, you know, undeniably reincarnations in some way.
A lot of Paul Grandjean's work and research is invested in DIY or do it with others technology, sort of breaking down assumptions that the technology around us needs specialized elite knowledge. And in fact, many of the things we're doing are doable by someone with the time and enthusiasm and curiosity. I'm really inspired by thinkers and designers like Enzo Mari, who in many ways you can think of as pioneers of open source logics in terms of design systems that can be self-assembled. And I'm interested in how ideas can circulate in ways that other people can adapt and reformulate them with the materials and equipment and ideas they have at hand. In many previous works, there are elements of recreating, reproducing, rehacking, sometimes pre-existing artworks as well as non-artworks, which are then reframed and represented. There's definitely this kind of continuity of thinking about repurposing and recirculation of both materials and ideas.
And in this way, the work almost mimics what's happening in the compost, in the soil itself. What a great use of technology, using our technology capabilities to renew a relationship with our garden that we might not have, and for the better, because we want a better song from our gardens.
I put a heap of compost in the center of a room and a bowl of really clean, pristine water. Why do people go ready to worship the clean drinking water and turn away from the gooey black soil, the blackness of it, the formless, the blackness of it? All the confusing constituent parts will end up in this like black, mushy, indistinguishable, formless base layer.
Finn Jordal is a biologist and human ecologist. 10 years ago, they moved to Wales, to a small village where they wanted to do experiments with compost and engage the local people in composting.
At which point do you make the connection? This little apple core that you're eating doesn't really need a bin. It can just rot in a hedge. When does that penny drop? But the question that Crew Compostio is really trying to answer is not the how, because composting is an ancient process. It's completely natural. Nobody's going to put the trademark label on it. It's the why of it. You know, why would someone bother? Why would someone confront the yuck factor of grossness, disgust, smells? Why would someone confront the time factor? You know, because we live in a de facto throwaway culture that says, take it, use it, make it, lose it, right? Is anyone going to want to work like a little ant with boxes of food waste? It turns out people will, not everyone, but enough people to make a viable alternative to curbside collection in Mahuntlet going to an AD digester in Bridgend. We're also doing this to connect a lot of people and open up more possibilities for people. You go to a pub in downtown Mahuntlet twice a week and there'll be a room full of people all just having conversations about soil microbes. You know, there's a constant sharing of like material flow. So someone's got a spare bin or someone tried a hot bin, it didn't work. We redirect it to another place where it might be better employed. We build warmeries for kids just to create a mutual relationship with the thing, to bring it alive, I guess. What is compost? This is an open question. Compost as a verb, it's an act. Composting is a very subversive act, and whether you live in a city or in a farm, there's a version of composting that will somehow bring something to your life and to your local ecosystem. Composting allows you to interrupt and ask, but what if, and how else, and why not? You know, people like to know, like, can it go wrong? What happens when it goes wrong? No, like when composting goes wrong, you don't throw it away. You don't put it in the bin and start again. You bring it back into the fold. You know, you put your hands in it, you care for it. I think that's an important lesson. You know, when it goes wrong, you don't discard it. It needs more attention, and it's telling you, oh, it's smelly, oh, it's sticky, oh, it's decomposed, it got stuck, the process got halted. You can just kickstart it again. It's really kind, because it will teach you what it needs.
It's such a wonderful teacher. By us learning what it needs, we also learn so much about ourselves and, you know, looking at regenerative possibilities in soil allows us to think about social regenerative possibilities for ourselves.
The way we live, it's extractive and it's quite literally unsustainable. The earth has a very natural mode of being that is dependent on balance and care and reciprocation, and we're so detached from this.
Our next artist is Fatima Alawat. In her kitchen, Fatima patiently sniffs, stirs, and layers scraps in a compost bin, a process which is redefining her sense of care and time.
Well, my practice, for me, I view as a form of stewardship for holding these cycles and questioning how we can culturally start to disengage from certain modes of being into modes of experiencing that are by nature naturally disruptive and challenge the linear modes of temporal existence and mono ways of looking at things and exploitative, extractive, uncaring ways of being. Composting is a creative process. Creative expressions can emerge, but the act of holding it is also very creative, transformative, and very multifaceted. And I am curious or interested in how we can approach contemporary art practice in a way where an artist is holding space like that, and that becomes the form. I'm very interested in women's work in relationship with regenerative processes. My understanding is a lot of even like small scale land work can be very devoid of intimacy and care, and that can just create some kind of extractive element to it that's not grounded in like a holistic, loving way of engaging with land and people and other creatures that are involved. You know, gathering lots of orange peels and working through that through academic research whilst also composting this matter. It so very quickly, almost instantly, became not about that. So I just had a plastic bucket in my flat and a bokashi bin, a composting bin, which enabled me to go through this process at home. It quickly became about intimacy, although I always knew it would be. It's a journey that's extremely sensorially engaging and demands attention in that way, almost exclusively. Like, I was very aware of the smells of the bokashi, of things when they became too moist, of the kind of environment as it changed because it was affecting my like living space. And I had to really quickly kind of learn what things should smell like, feel like, and that involved me often going out into the world and gathering more materials or sourcing, like getting dry leaves and putting them in, or picking up cardboard from my recycling bin and breaking that up and putting it in, or saving some eggshells to process. So it just grew and grew and grew into this kind of multifaceted archive suddenly of not just me and my home, but my surrounding space, and with it also my sensorial knowledge evolution and the academic research that I was doing at the time. It all kind of fit in to this like compost. For example, at the start of, you know, a particular smell, I'm like, okay, vinegar, kombucha, like rotten eggs. And after a while, they tell me more things about them than I have projected onto them. I have that, my personal attribution to it, but what that really tells me about the compost is not about me. That's just my kind of my trigger to, or a gateway to seeing something that I can't otherwise see.
I really admire her composting as a form of storytelling, or compost as a memoir in some way, right? Or compost as a journal. But also, it has so much going on for itself.
It's a real relationship. Much like, you know, other quite intimate relationships that we build, whether that's with people or, you know, you just start to want to, like, be with something and you kind of trust that process rather than needing to, like, categorize it or put it in a box. My kind of interest artistically is just to do a job of holding that with the hope that either that becomes social in a way, that cycle, and people become involved in it, or these tiny moments of creative expression touch people in a way that invites them to engage with their own cycles somehow. Because I think that's where the transformation happens in some way, like you just need to be doing it.
I do think there's something very important and powerful about burying somebody in the ground as opposed to cremating them. It's a constant memento mori for everybody who passes through that land. If we get away from this idea that graveyards are taboo spaces, then I think the power of walking across someone under the ground is absolutely immense. It's heart-stoppingly moving to go around an old churchyard and read these headstones and these stories of people who died 200-300 years previously, and then come across one and it's, you know, a child or a baby who died a couple of years ago. I think it also places us properly within the body of the earth in a way which has enormous symbolic meaning. It's the final commitment to our planet of going, I am not going to disperse into fumes and gases and be speedily carbonized and carried around. I'm just going to sink back in to the earth where I came from, dust to dust, ashes to ashes, earth to earth. It still has such resonance because you do, when you're burying somebody, go, you know, however you believe we came to, this is our home. And there's something really proper about returning somebody to the solid body of our earth, our home.
I think about trying to renew my vows to the earth. And I remember when I tried to, growing a garden was a new beginning for me. It was very much renewing my vows to my relationship with the planet, the soil, the animal life, the plant life, to get to know it, to change my beliefs about it, to change the way I speak about it, to change the way I treat it. Compost teaches us that that is possible. And we don't have to give up.
Separation of humans from soil and our connection has been such a recent phenomenon. We're talking really only in the last 100 years that people have become so disparate in their relationship to what gives us life.
This is the agroecologist, Nicole Masters.
We are utterly dependent on soil, from climate regulation, temperature, water quality, biodiversity. There's nothing really on this earth that doesn't come back to soil health. Everything comes back to soil.
It's really vitally important that we start to readdress some of the pain caused on land that is evidenced in land now, as soon as possible. It's already too late, really.
We've torn apart this relationship that really is the reason why you're here. How do we reweave and remend that relationship, even if we are living in cities? What excites me about seeing exhibitions like this one is we're bringing that awareness back to people. 100 years ago, you were either a farmer or your family were farmers. You were living in environments where the way food was produced was much more present in your own life.
how do we create healthy community and right relationship with the world around us? If we do it from the ground up, it will probably be even better for us. Before we look for another planet, let's look at what we can do to save the one that we have right now. And that's why artists are turning their gaze downwards. I know there is some looking up, of course, and we do need a bit of both, but to look down and see how we can start from our very beginnings. I'm Shanice Aretha. This episode is produced by Joe Barrett. The series is produced by Joe Barrett and Alana Chance for Somerset House. The exec producers are Alana Chance and Eleanor Scott. Original music is by Andrew Peckler. Soil, The World at Our Feet, will be on at Somerset House until the 13th of April, 2025.